You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. If he does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your host, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This being your breakdown edition as we look at a 24-12 NDSU victory at home last week. And first off, I want to thank Ross for having a co-host fill in for me as I was out west near Ortonville, Minnesota. Didn't have any Wi-Fi out there. The VRBO ad said there was Wi-Fi, there was not, so I could not help out Ross' podcast, so I want to thank him for having someone fill in for me. But Ross, how are you?
I'm well. I was able to get a lot of good interviews in this week, and basketball season's approaching. Everybody knows how pro hoops we are on this podcast, even to the point of annoyance sometimes, but I've got a big interview with the head coach coming up today, so I'm excited about that. I'm excited to dive into the 2017-2018 Bison basketball season, but this football season is certainly still going strong.
Certainly is, and so let's get into that right away here with some news and notes. And first, we always have to talk injuries. So I know we have to talk about the Lance Dunn injury, but I also want to – I know that Coach Kleiman says Easton Stick is 100%, Ross, but watching that Vine, I don't know how in the world you can say that. So what are your thoughts on Easton Stick being quote-unquote 100%, and where are we at with Lance Dunn?
Well, with Stick, I mean, I'm just – I don't know. I'm going to believe the coach because I don't – there's no – I have no remembrance of ever, you know, the NDSU staff being dishonest about injury. He kind of half smiled when he was responding to my question at the press conference. I'm not sure anybody else really caught that, but he was limping noticeably between plays. So I was really impressed with his performance just from a kind of a grit standpoint, because he really did. He landed very awkwardly, and something happened there, but it must have been a strain, you know, or a sprain or something that he's fine with, because they don't anticipate even really limiting his practice whatsoever this week. So the concern level on Stick has to be low until, you know, unless and until we find something out completely different. So like I said, I've got no reason to distrust the staff whatsoever. The Lance Dunn hip injury, I think he got nicked on like an ankle or something earlier in the game because he had lost some explosiveness and he was limping a bit. And then, I don't know if it's – sometimes you get like an overcompensation injury. I don't know if that was the case. But he was tackled near NDSU's own goal line and then kind of rolled into the end zone and was taken off the field. And Bruce Anderson had to carry the ball the rest of the way. So basically, you know, Bison down to their last healthy back in that game. But they should get Ty Brooks back, which will give NDSU a 1-2 punch. Now, who that emergency running back is, I don't know. I happened to notice in warmups and then confirm that the number three guy on Saturday was Demetri Williams, who's a wide receiver that they use on jet sweeps quite a bit and played, I think, kind of a wingback position.
Yeah, for Rosemont.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. So that's a guy I think feels very comfortable, could do it. I know Brock Robbins had a ton of rushing yards at Cavalier. If he was forced into a tailback role, there's a lot of guys, I think, on the squad that probably played quarterback or running back on their teams and had the ball in their hands because most of the guys in Division I football were the best athletes on their team. I think especially on designed outside runs, kind of anybody can run the football. The place that it takes a lot of patience is the A-gap power and kind of inside zone and stuff that you're going to run with Brooks and Anderson anyway. So I have a low level of concern, especially with the way they feel that Dunn is really only week to week. Cofield is really only week to week. They'll get some semblance of a running back stable back together here before long.
If you had to put a number on the amount of touches you expect Ty Brooks to get this upcoming week against Northern Iowa with Lance Dunn out, where would you think of putting that number around right now?
You know, I mean, I think you're probably looking at a 20-carry game, a 25-carry game from Bruce Anderson, and then you'll get your 8 to 10 from Ty Brooks. And we just talked about it, but then depending on Stick's health, you know, you're going to get your 5 to 7 from him as well.
Sounds good to me. And final thing I want to ask you about is when you look at the Missouri Valley right now with a South Dakota loss, their first of the season, NDSU sets up to potentially be able to win the conference outright here pretty soon. Do you want to walk our listeners through what the situation may have to be?
Well, the point of really what I saw there was now, you know, NDSU, with the exception of the 2013 season, and as we're seeing with another one of my weekly polls, the favorite Bison team of all time, because it doesn't matter what position I put up there. If they're on the 13 team, they're the best of all time. But that 13 squad did not lose a game, did not lose a conference game, but the 11 squad did, 12, 14, 15. So unless you really feel like this is that level of team, you have to at least entertain the idea that the Bison might drop one. But as long as they don't drop the one they don't drop is to South Dakota, they can still now win the conference outright as long as they beat USD. So if they do happen to go to Brookings and lose, or UNI does clip them, or they lose the season finale to Illinois State, they would still have a chance as a one-loss team to be outright Missouri Valley Football Conference champions as long as they can beat USD in the Dome. So that is a positive thing, I think, moving forward, and really I think shows the parity of this year's version of the Missouri Valley Football Conference.
I agree. So let's talk a little bit of recruiting here before we get into our interview for the day. Let's talk a little recruiting. And I do want to touch on some 2018 guys, but I also want to touch on some 2019 guys that were at the game on Saturday. So for 2018 right now, from talking with some sources close to the NDSU football program, the two guys that the staff is really watching now and has high on their radar, with Ronnie Audette now on the boat, the best interior lineman in the state of Minnesota to me, are two guys, one from Illinois, one from Iowa, one a tight end from Iowa by the name of Ben Subbard, someone that has been playing his recruitment extremely close to the vest. I know that NDSU is working hard at potentially setting up a unofficial game day visit for him so he can see everything one more time before potentially making a decision. And then Ross touched on him, I believe, last week, was a kid from Illinois by the name of Destin Talbert, someone that has the ability to play defensive back, can play wide receiver as well. NDSU feels that they're in a very good position for him. And those are the two guys that, if you're trying to see who's next to pop in this 2018 class, those are the two names I'd be keeping an eye on. But when you look at the game day visits last Saturday, I think NDSU had the two best quarterbacks in the 2019 Minnesota class on campus. One from Breck by the name of David Roddy, who's also a hoops guy. I believe he's got a Northern Iowa basketball offer, but I think that athletically this kid can be a Big Ten caliber athlete, whether that's at the tight end, defensive line. I know that he wants to play quarterback, but it sounds like NDSU could be close to giving out their first 2019 offer. And keep an eye on David Roddy there. Again, someone that is extremely athletically gifted at 6'4", 250 pounds. Now, whether that means he's going to play quarterback, tight end, or defensive line at the next level is going to remain to be seen. But they also had a kid from Eden Prairie, a quarterback on campus by the name of Cole Kramer, someone that I think, from what I've seen of the 2019 Minnesota quarterback class, he's the best. And I think he's an absolute Power 5 kind of a talent. So it's going to be interesting to see, Ross, how this staff determines who they want to offer at quarterback, because I think the 2019 quarterback class for Minnesota is pretty deep, because there's also another kid from the Metro by the name of Otto Bennett, who's also competing with those two above him. So, Ross, do you want to set up for our interview here today?
Yeah, a really exciting interview here for Bison fans, in my opinion. This is a friend of mine by the name of Ben Fennell. Ben, like myself, is a Packers fan. But he's actually a Philadelphia Eagles employee, does a lot of video work for them, but is a film junkie in the same way that I am, loves to watch the All-22, loves to break down technique, really loves the game of football, actually has a rotation. Ben, as he'll explain kind of in the video, works for Mike Mayock during draft season, then works for NFL Films, and then works for the NFL, works for the Eagles during the NFL season. So Ben is a very, very knowledgeable guy, and as kind of is with everybody in the Philadelphia Eagles organization right now, a big, big fan of our guy Carson Wentz. So this is kind of your hashtag Pro Bison segment, part for the show here. We'll have Ben's interview, and then we will break down the win over Western Illinois. We're lucky enough to welcome on Ben Fennell. Ben wears many hats, but one of those is as an employee of the Philadelphia Eagles. Ben, kind of explain who you are and kind of why I guess you and I sort of know each other in the internet sense and kind of what you do.
Yeah, well, you know, we've interacted quite a bit on Twitter and through social media over the past couple of years. But, you know, I have a bit of a jack of all trades in the football media business. I work in the media department of the Philadelphia Eagles, content producing and doing a lot of their editing for video pieces. I'll then hop over to ESPN College Football on the weekends and travel out to a college game and do some X's and O's and some editing in the truck on location. And then once the season ends, I hop over to NFL Films here in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and I serve as Mike Mayock's primary researcher and video editor as well for all his Senior Bowl, Combine, draft tapes. And that's kind of my my yearly cycle of football and media, and it's a lot of football, but life can be worse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Ben is a film junkie, just kind of the same way that I am. And what he failed to mention there is Ben is also a Packers guy, so he and I have been kind of paying attention to some of the All-22 things that go on, and he's one of the guys I always look to for breakdowns and somebody that really enjoys the finer points of football. But that's not what we're here to talk about today, because this is Bison Report Radio, and we're going to talk about a certain Bison that ended up in Philadelphia in Carson Wentz. Can you feel the Wentzelmania that's going on through Philly right now?
I mean, having been with the Eagles for 4 years now, I felt it, you know, the second he got in the building, you know, in the 2016 spring and the summer, and the way he started 3-0 last year. And I think you just immediately felt that this guy was special and that this guy had something to really bring to the table and to instill himself as a franchise quarterback for 10, 12, 15 years. And, I was a big believer of his at North Dakota State and studying his tape and his draft preparation. I'm not surprised in the least bit. I think this is the same Carson Wentz that you guys had the privilege of experiencing for a couple of years and through a couple FCS championships. And I'm the least bit surprised, and I'm just happy for him to have the opportunity and to show everyone, you know, what he can do.
So let's talk for a little bit about kind of the haters. I mean, this is a guy who's been a little bit of a lightning rod and put some not great stuff maybe on film towards the end of last season. Don't talk about anybody specific, but in general, what were some of the worries about Wentz going into the draft, and then what were some of the things that manifested themselves on film last year that were not positive?
Well, the major concern, which is, you know, primary focus number one, was just the level of competition. There was a bit of an unknown from NFL circles in the level of competition at North Dakota State, and not to put any detriment to the FCS and that competition, it just wasn't a Power 5 D1 school, and there was just that little bit of hesitation and doubt in what you're getting and who he was playing against each week. So that was obviously the main concern, but aside from that, it was really tough to find issues in his game. Yeah, he had some accuracy issues, some mechanical issues with his base and his throwing motion that have trickled into the NFL. But he was a fairly sound prospect that came from a pro-style scheme that was given a lot of leeway in decision-making at the line of scrimmage, which you really aren't seeing in these Division I Power 5 spread offenses. And I think he really had a skill set that was usable and functional in the NFL.
So what have you seen now from year one to year two? Turnovers are down. Yards per attempt is up. The touchdown-interception ratio is, I think, what really jumps out to me. What is Wentz doing that you're noticing on film, whether it's from mechanics or maybe Philadelphia scheming better? I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, he did slightly adjust his mechanics in the offseason. He's shining out over stride with his lead foot. It's very easy for these quarterbacks who are 23, 24 years old to resort and revert back to what they knew growing up in high school and college. And he does occasionally revert back to that wide base, and You know, in the beginning of games, passes will sail on him and he'll get a little jumpy. But, you know, aside from that, I think his accuracy has been fairly well and improved in 2017. He's cutting down on the interceptions and the overthrows. Occasionally to start games, yeah, you know, a pass or two might sail on him. And he's not perfect. And I think we all get into this stage of evaluation where we want to grade everybody off of the scale of perfection. And it's kind of an impractical metric to grade these guys off of. He's not perfect. He has issues. He misses throws at times. But the biggest factor in 2017 is his management of the game. He's given so much responsibility at the line of scrimmage that the average fan just isn't privy to what he's doing as far as pre-snap to post-snap, from in the huddle, out of the huddle, the decision-making, the going to the line with two plays and killing a play based on certain looks, the different RPOs that he's given access to, you know, hand it off or pull it for a quick little in-breaker. It's some of those decisions and responsibilities I think the average fan really misses in what he brings to the table.
How much of his success, when you compare 2017 to 2016, can you attribute to the improvement of the weapons that he has now with the Eagles?
No question. I mean, it's 180 degrees. You know, there's some guys like Trey Burton and Zach Ertz that are still hanging around, but to grab somebody with the reputation of Alshon Jeffrey, who still commands, you know, safety help over the top, and to get some speed elements like a Mac Hollins in the draft or a Torrey Smith in free agency. And, you know, Nelson Aguilar, I have said from the get-go, he is the best receiver on the team. He was last year, he was his rookie year, and he is today. He just had issues last year with his confidence, and it really got into his head and started to get the drops. And it's just very refreshing to see him playing faster, playing more confident. And across the board from the, you know, the different tight ends and Trey Burton and Zach Ertz and the three running backs, I don't really know how to match up against this team each week. There's just a great versatility of weapons, and they're very multiple. I'm not really sure how you game plan them heading into week-to-week matchups.
I really feel like a lot of comparisons can be drawn to Nelson Aguilar's time with the Eagles, with Davante Adams' time with Green Bay. I mean, a guy that people were basically ready to run out of town, but was they're both top 45 picks and both exceptional wide receivers. So I appreciate your thoughts on Aguilar and kind of agreed the whole way. One big negative, though, is what happened last night, and that's the loss of Jason Peters. Talk about how good of a player Peters is and what his loss might mean for this team moving forward and their options really to replace him.
Yeah, as I stated earlier, and I've been with the Eagles for 4 years, and I've just done nothing but garner an extreme infatuation with Jason Peters' play. I truly believe he gives you 3.5 seconds of all-pro play on every snap. And if you think about that, 3.5 seconds, that's kind of lazy. He doesn't really play through the whistle. If you get 3.5 seconds of all-pro play from your tackle every snap, you will not have an issue with that tackle. And that's what you have with Jason Peters. Just a pillar of consistency, a pillar of reliability, an enforcer, a great teammate, and just somebody you want on your football team. It was absolutely crushing to see him go down, because I just really appreciate what he brings to the table and his level of play. Does he really play to the whistle every play? No. Wentz wants to scramble around. Is he going to run around and block with Wentz? Probably not. That isn't his style of game. It's not a detriment to his game. What he brings every year, every game, every week, it's irreplaceable. And you're not going to replace Jason Peters. Now, they do have a couple viable backups. Halepu'a Vaitai, a second-year player at a TCU, late-round draft pick, was forced into the lineup last year for Lane Johnson's suspension for PEDs. He got the 10-game suspension. Really struggled out of the gates, but settled down as the season wore on. And I think he's ready to take on a bigger role. It's still up in the air on whether Lane will move to left tackle and Big V will be at right tackle, or whether you keep Lane at right tackle and only have one switch on the offensive line. I think they're still trying to figure out where to go moving forward. But Halepu'a Vaitai is 6'5", 320. He's a big kid. He's nimble. He's a bit soft-spoken of a person. But he has experience, and I think he's capable to fill in the role. And you're not going to get the Jason Peters level of play, but I think Big V can come in and keep the offense moving.
All right, Ben, last question. Currently, or maybe not currently, but I would imagine it hasn't moved much. Carson Wentz is actually your Vegas odds-on favorite to win the MVP this season. What do you think he and the Eagles have to do to continue to make that a possibility?
Well, right now it's just keeping it going. And we're in the midseason, we're heading into week 8, and we're going to start fighting some injuries, and things are going to happen. Injuries are not an excuse. Depth wins in the NFL. And I don't care if it's Jason Peters going down, Joe Thomas, J.J. Watt, or Aaron Rodgers. Injuries are not an excuse. And I love this time of year and seeing the exposure on how teams are really built. What does your practice squad look like? How did you draft late into the season? And I think the Eagles did a pretty good job. And now that we have some injuries mounting from Jason Peters and Jordan Hicks, you know, went down with an Achilles yesterday. He's done for the year. Sproles already went down. We're going to see that next guy step up. And I think it's a well-built team to make a late push into the playoffs, obviously win the NFC East. And we'll see if we can contend with the Super Bowl. And as long as 11 is back there, this team believes in Carson Wentz. And as long as Wentz is showing up every week, and the best thing that Carson Wentz can do for the Philadelphia Eagles is be available. Take care of himself, take care of his body, try to stay healthy, and if Wentz is back there, this team has a shot. And I think the city believes that, the team believes that, the fan believes that, and it's no more, hey, is Carson Wentz the real deal? Somebody asked me on Twitter, hey, you know, I saw Carson Wentz, is it fair to compare him to Aaron Rodgers? No. Carson Wentz at this point is Carson Wentz. He's passed comparisons in his career. You can now start comparing some college players to Carson Wentz if you'd like. But Carson Wentz is his own dude, and I think he's earned that. And I'm very excited to see where he goes. I'm excited to see him get some playoff games under his belt and to see him take more of a command of this offense, the team, the city. I'm just really excited for him. You know, it's a very positive, optimistic time in Philadelphia, having come from the black cloud of kind of the Chip Kelly era and the hostility with him and the city and rubbing the team the wrong way. It's just very refreshing to be a part of this.
All right, Ben, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on, Ross.
All right, Ryan, let's get into it.
All right, so the first thing we have to talk about is, unfortunately, a quote-unquote negative, but Easton Stick was bound to throw his first touch or his first interception of the year. We saw that, and unfortunately he had two picks on the day. But just overall, Easton's performance, again, you touched on it on your Upon Film Review piece, which is, again, free on the Bison Report right now. Head on over and check that out before we get into things so you have a frame of reference to some of the things that Ross is talking about. But what did you think of Easton Stick's performance on the day, and was it just kind of regression coming back to the mean with Easton throwing his first interceptions?
Well, the first one was not on him. Zach Johnson folded up like a lawn chair in pass protection, and Easton got walloped. The ball hung. It was nowhere near any intended target. It was absolutely affected by the throw. The second one was on him. That was a waggle concept where they had, you know, guy short, guy medium, and a guy going long. Shepard was the guy going long, and Shepard was open for a touchdown. And Stick just underthrew him a little bit. Kleiman said in the press conference that Easton made the comment that their safety got over a little faster than NDSU scout team safety, which is bound to happen. But, I mean, that was a touchdown if he had just put a little more air under the ball and thrown it 3, 4, 5 yards further. Great play by the UNI defensive back, but really I think the first big mental mistake by – not even mental mistake because that was a correct read. That was the first big physical error by Easton Stick this season, because I'm not going to put that first interception on him, and that's not me really being biased in any way either. I mean, that's just the deal.
All right, sounds good to me. I mean, you also touched on it with his adjusted completion percentage in the article. I mean, he also didn't really get any help from his receiving core with, I believe you pointed out, 4 drops. So, I mean, with the 4 drops there, I mean, it's tougher to say, you know, much poor about his performance otherwise. But let's talk a little bit of defense here. The defense only gives up 6 points because of the pick six from Western Illinois. What did you think overall on the defensive performance for the day?
Wow, I thought it was incredible. I mean, you look at how many points those guys were scoring going into that game, and to not allow an offensive touchdown and to kind of keep them at their, you know, the yardage totals that they kept them at was, cow, really, really impressive. I mean, I was blown away by that performance. I think it was easily their best performance of the season against WIU. I was very impressed with the defensive line. I was very impressed with Jabril Cox. I think Nick DeLuca looks a lot closer. And a secondary, and we'll get to this a little bit later, that was basically playing without Jalen Wimbush, really impressive as well.
So Lance Dunn goes out. That means you're going to see the Bruce Anderson show, which is, again, very much endorsed by this podcast, considering, you know, how much these two guys are fans of Bruce Anderson. But Bruce in the day, 21 carries for 93 yards. Bruce has to step up and get a bigger workload, and he was able to do that. So what did you think about Mr. Bruce Anderson's performance?
It was good. I mean, you got a guy who's a kick return specialist, then becomes kind of the outside run specialist, and then bulks up to 220, and now he's the power back. He's really showing the ability to be a complete player. I pointed out some exceptional pass protection from him on a big third down. He's becoming a complete back. I actually had a chance to talk to Bruce yesterday. We'll share that interview with you on Thursday. Bruce didn't have a ton to say, but you can definitely tell that he's ready for this feature back role. I mean, it's going to be his show, and it hasn't been one guy's show in the way that it will be for Bruce since the John Crockett days, really. This has been at least a two-headed monster for a while, but they just don't have any monsters left. Ty Brooks is going to be able to run some change of pace stuff. But like we said in the open, Bruce Anderson's going to get 25, 28 carries in this game, and it's going to be interesting to see how he holds up and how effective he is going into the fourth quarter.
You talked about Jabril Cox a little bit earlier, and again, you pointed out it's the first piece in your upon film review piece on the Bison Report. He's a special football player. The way he's able to make plays in both space and in traffic, Ross, is something that is going to be fun to watch here in the upcoming years. Why don't you take a little time to talk about Mr. Jabril Cox?
Very impressive. Jabril, as far as I'm concerned, is the most talented outside linebacker I've ever seen at North Dakota State. Just from a talent perspective, he's not – I don't know if he's going to be the best. I mean, we're talking about Travis Beck, Carlton Littlejohn, talking about Ramon Humber, a guy that has played – he's still in the NFL after all these years. That's high praise. But just from an athleticism standpoint and a length standpoint – and somebody who's really, until Nick DeLuca gets back to 100%, probably the best defender on the team as a freshman, you've got to be excited about Jabril Cox. And like I said in the film review piece, there are linebackers that make plays in space. There are linebackers that muck it up in traffic, guys like a Matt Plank. Jabril Cox excels at both, and that makes you A, an elite college player, and B, I mean, we're still 3 years away from this, but B, I mean, a guy that could legitimately play on Sundays. So Bison Nation, definitely enjoy the next 3.5 seasons of Jabril Cox.
I know you've harped on this all year with the young defensive ends lacking the ability to get pressure, but I think if the end of the last few weeks are any indication, Ross, I think you're going to be a much happier man when we do these breakdown editions of the podcast. Do you agree?
They're doing much better. I mean, they're playing a lot better. I've been very impressed with Coach Buda. I think Derek Tuska is turning into a really, really good player. Stanley Jones is turning into a really, really good player. And you could have the best group of defensive ends, I think, probably since, you know, like the Jerick, Boyer, Hardy, Emmanuel group next season. When you add these young guys that are getting all these chances to play and improving – and getting better at their craft, and then you add in an All-American like Greg Menard next year, that defense could be really, really exciting. I know they lose Nick DeLuca, but if you get even 85% of Dan Marlette back and you pair him with Jordheim and Cox, that's going to be an absolutely fearsome front seven when you consider the depth at defensive end and, of course, the young depth at defensive tackle, and the guys that they're rotating in there right now will get plenty of chance to play again next season, just one more year bigger and stronger. So I think you have to be really, really excited about the defensive line and the way they played against Western Illinois, because that is a good offense. Max Norris, the power back, was a non-factor. Sean McGuire, one of the better QBs in the league, was pretty limited in what he was able to do and was visibly frustrated by the end of that game. And McShane even was pretty much bottled up.
I know that your opinion on the Dom Davis penalty is probably different than some other NDSU fans. Do you want to give your opinion there and why you think it's not as much of a big deal as some other people think?
Yeah, this is a very conservative part of the country, and just kind of a go about your business, act like you've been there before fan base, which I completely understand. But my end of it is just what I understand about the defensive back position. Defensive backs get beat all the time. You have to basically be a lunatic to play that position and have a short memory. You have to play with such confidence to be a good defensive back at any level, especially a corner. And I don't have a problem with him making a huge hit, getting up and flexing his muscles. People do it all the time. They don't get flagged. You cannot stand over the opposing player and flex your muscles. That is 15 yards every time. It's a dumb penalty. But like I said, I've got no problem. I don't need him to act like he's been there before. You make a huge play, you look at your sideline, you flex, you dance, you do whatever you want. Go ahead and look at after Trey Dempsey won the game with that interception. He did a little dance, but it was at his teammates. It was a celebration. I got no problem with that. Defensive back is such a difficult position to play. Just don't show up your opponent. That is going to be 15 yards every time, and it's dumb.
How about just Dom Davis's play with Marquise Bridges overall? You know, with Wimbush a little bit nicked up, it was nice to see the young corners come up and play well.
Yeah, they really did. I was impressed. I got a chance to talk to the young corners, and you'll get pieces of those interviews, I think, in the preview pod for Northern Iowa. But I was very impressed. You talk about a secondary where they knew they were going to be without Wimbush. He got a stinger. They put him on special teams only. And they lost one of their junior leaders. And so Jalen Allison took one side, but Marquise Bridges and Dom Davis played a ton of football. And these guys keep just getting better and better. And I'm specifically impressed with Marquise because that cornerback position is not easy. The cornerback position in NDSU's scheme is not easy. And for him to make that flip over from wide receiver, I think has been a really big deal for this defense to have depth at corner when you've got guys in the program like Felix Dixon that are going to be very good players but aren't quite ready to contribute.
Final thing I want to touch on today is one of your favorite guys, RJ Erzendowski, 4 for 100 and a touch. This is a squad that's going to miss him when he's gone, aren't they?
Yeah, I've been kind of looking forward to next year's season opening interview with Easton and just asking him what it's going to be like to play football without RJ Erzendowski. Stick, of course, redshirted when Erzendowski did not. Those guys came in from Creighton Prep in the same class. It'll be the first time in 8 years not playing football together. But not only Stick, I think the program's going to miss RJ. He's a really impressive football player. Nobody will ever forget his performance in the 2014 National Championship game. But as it continues on, I mean, not a guy that necessarily creates a ton of separation, but wins contested catches, runs excellent routes, and has really, really good hands. I was blown away by his two consecutive drops in the fourth quarter. When you upset someone that much by dropping the football, it means you probably don't drop the football a lot. But I was really, really surprised by that and absolutely would not assume that that's anything, you know, that's coming in the future.
Sounds good to me. Anything else before we wrap things up for today?
No, sir.
All right, so we're going to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow to preview the Northern Iowa game this weekend. But I want to thank you guys for listening. If you can, please head on over to the Bison Report. Check out Ross's pieces. I should also have something up with the opposing beat writer today from Northern Iowa so we can start to look at UNI game week. And Ross will also be back with obviously some interviews and his preview piece as we look forward to this UNI game. So if you can, rate, review us on iTunes or Stitcher, whatever podcasting format you found us at. We'll be back tomorrow, folks. Thanks for listening, and go Bison.